warned, and I apologise in advance if there's more disembodied meows and purring, because I fed the cat twice to try and keep him quiet, but I can see him behind me. Obviously you guys can't because I'm shorter for you, but like, I can see him sitting behind me staring at the back of my head. Oh, so I'm just waiting for him to start his meows. So yeah, if that shit happens again, you know why. He's looking for more food that he doesn't deserve because he's already obese.
Oreo's a big bitch.
He's so fat and he's already asthmatic, so he needs to lose weight. Even my cat has asthma.
God, love him.
Anyway, so we don't have a lot of time for faff today because we made the grand mistake of covering three stories that really deserve their own episodes and trying to condense them into like 20 minute snippets. We're going to do our best. We're going to try and get through it as quickly as we can with as much information without, you know, sounding like a racehorse conductor just like, and in the light we have this dog and this dog's going faster and that dog's going faster
too. I mean, that's just how I talk normally, so
You're fine, that is just your trademark, but like, me and Cuiva need to pick up the pace here because we're the slow talkers of the group. So
yeah, I'm like
it's a learning curve. We're still new to all of this. We're still trying to learn how to be professionals.
Maybe Adam could just do like
fucking messers,
speed me up by like a quarter. You know, like on YouTube, it's like 1.25.
Oh yeah, if someone's just talking
so
too Lizzie's much,
just
you're
like, normal, and I'm on like 1.25.
Yeah,
that would work.
Let's dive in. We're gonna roll for who goes first.
Right, will I do imaginary drum roll?
And 'tis a 16. So Lizzie, take us away on a journey to unsolved murder.
So this week, I'm going to do the Texarkana Moonlight Murders. Have ye ever heard anything about it before?
No, not a blessed thing.
The name is familiar.
To me.
But I can't remember.
People can be free to correct me if they want, but still not going to change my opinion. It's kind of like the original Zodiac. And obviously, you're all familiar with the Zodiac, I take it. And if not, sort your life out. So,
I mean, if you're listening to a true crime podcast and you haven't heard of the Zodiac,
bit embarrassing, like.
We're probably never going to cover him. So.
No, it's just, I'm not ready for that headache, to be honest. This is why I think I took, the original, because it's not as intense. Not as intense, because obviously, like, loads of people were murdered, but there's just not as much detail as the fucking Zodiac. But anyway, I'm faffing. Okay, so like I said before. No, I never said anything before. We're starting now. So, it's the year, right, 1946, and it's a tiny, tiny town between the border of Texas and Arkansas. So they'll whoop the name together and it's Texarkana.
Okay.
Also, can I actually just ask a question to any Americans out there? Why the fuck is it spelt like it'd be pronounced Arkansas, but it's called Arkansas?
Yes.
It's always irritated me.
You're not French. You don't get to pretend that last S doesn't exist. It's not acceptable.
No.
It's Arkansas, and I'm not going to pronounce it any other way from now on.
So it was, like I said, a very, very small town, like I think with a population under like 20,000, and it's like far spread out. The small quaint town would be stalked by an elusive masked psychopath known as the Phantom.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. So the Phantom would commit several rapes and murders for a devastating reign that would only last 4 months.
Oh shit.
Wow.
So he like escalated very, very, very quickly. And then there's some questions like, did he escalate or was this actually in the middle of his escalation, as they call it? Like, these weren't his first murders.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. Given the severity of them. So
I'll weigh in on that when I know more detail. I can
keep clued. So the Phantom would primarily stalk secluded spots, and they'd often be where teenagers would go to like just spend a bit of alone time, do a little few bits, and he'd wait for them and then strike. So he had a total of 8 victims, 5 died and 3 survived. So each of the surviving victims all said that he had snuck up on them either from out of the bushes or just like out of the darkness, because like I said before, this all took place at night, and that's why it was dubbed the Moonlight Murders, all at night.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he would wear a tattered cloth bag, kind of like a pillowcase, and only have holes cut out for the eyes and a tiny one for the mouth.
Oh my god, shit.
Imagine how scary that is. I'm sorry, you're sitting there and you're seeing this emerging from the bushes.
Scarecrow from Batman, that's all I'm thinking.
Kind of, yeah.
No, thank you.
So his first victims were Jimmy Hollis, 24, and Mary Jean Leary, and she was 19. And it was the 22nd of February, and they had just come back from one of their dates to the cinema, and before dropping them home, Jimmy was like, "Will we pull into Lover's Lane?" I'm sure he said it, like, more seductive than that, but...
He probably was like, "Will we go over there and park up?" She was probably
go
like,
"Go over and
we have a go of it, like,
So they parked up at a Lover's Lane on Richmond Road, and not long after them arriving, they see the phantom emerging out of the darkness, like out of the wooded area,
and
slowly towards their car. So obviously they stop what they're doing and are watching him march beeline for their fucking car.
Why would you?
If I saw that, I would be driving, put this shit in reverse
and let's go.
But is it like the fear of being like, what the fuck is this? And then the panic of trying to drive away.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
It's got to be your response. It's like fight or flight, but there's also freeze. Everyone forgets about freeze, and freeze is a big ass problem.
Yeah.
So obviously they were freezers.
Totally. Well, you would though, because you'd be like, is it real as well? You'd kind of be like, what am I looking at?
Yeah. But as well, when he was coming out of the bushes, like obviously they could see the man and he'd be lying into them, but he shone a torch through the window of the car. So like, that's blinding them as well. So they're like,
instantly disorientated. Like they're not going to.
Straight away.
That's where you reverse the car at full speed and then drive it forward as fast as you can and just take that bitch
Mow him down
like the grass. Fuck him.
Yeah, you're sure. You're actually dead fucking right. And I won't feel any way bad about it. Because even if it was innocent, don't go sneaking up on people in pitch black. Yeah. And then expect not to get hit by a car.
It's like the clown people of 2016. We're not going into it, but you know what I'm on about. And like, they all deserve to get a slap for car as well.
That just ended and nobody spoke about it since. And it's the weirdest
thing ever. I missed those.
Honestly, 2016 we thought was the worst year until we met 2020. We weren't prepared. But yeah, no, that's
a
tangent.
To a better time.
It's a tangent for another day.
Oh my God, reeling in the years, 2016.
Oh my God.
So he goes up to the window of the car and pulls out a gun. And he orders the two of them out of the car and tells Jimmy to drop his trousers.
Don't know why.
Probably so he can't run after him. And then he pistol whips him and Jimmy falls to the floor. Now, he hit Jimmy that hard that his skull actually fractured in three different places. And the noise of the hit, Mary thought that Jimmy had actually been shot. That's how hard he got hit with the fucking gun. Like, the noise of that cracking off his skull, she thought he had been shot. So, obviously now Jimmy's fucking KO'd on the floor. And fucking the Phantom turns into Mary and begins his attack on her. So he hits her with the butt of the gun, not as hard as it's after cracking poor Jimmy. But then he tells her to run, so he's giving her a chance. But the sly fucker only did that because he knew Mary was wearing high heels. And she wasn't going to have time to take them off. So she starts running. Obviously, any girls, any lads that wear high heels.
You would have no chance.
You know you're sprinting, but you're not getting far.
Running on the balls of your feet as well, so like you can't get the right.
And
like,
it's out of the lover's lane. She's in grass.
I was just going to say, she's in a grass area, so your heels are going to slide into.
Yeah.
And maybe she had the chunkier heels, probably wasn't stilettos. That could be her only saving grace, but like, they're still going to be getting stuck in the chunks of grass.
Of course,
like,
but even
and
wrong,
it's
you
February.
Wouldn't want to go waiting them because
you're
in February and you're gone.
But
abolish high heels. 2020, I'm starting a movement. Let's go.
Flats
forever. It's the only way to run from your serial killers.
Like I said, she went booting it, but obviously, and it wasn't fast enough. And she was chased down and hit with the butt of the gun again, and it knocked her to the ground. Trigger warning, she gets sexually assaulted with the barrel of the gun.
Oh my god, no!
Yeah. Yeah, and she starts screaming at him. She's trying to fight him off, and she's actually roaring at him. Just go ahead and fucking kill me.
Yeah.
But by the grace of fucking God, or whatever you believe in, a car had come around the corner, and the headlights on the car actually spooked the Phantom, and he ran off and left her. So I'd say effectively saving her life.
100%.
But despite their horrific injuries, the pair of them, they both survived.
Wow.
Like, physically, they healed up and they were grand, but obviously the mental trauma stood with them for the rest of their fucking lives.
Yeah. I'd never leave the house again if that happened to me.
No. You couldn't, like... And do you know what's actually... It pissed me off so much. Obviously, the press reported on the attack, but they wouldn't report on Mary's rape because they said it was too vulgar. Are you fucking joking me?
Oh, God bless the delicate sensitivities of the people it didn't happen to.
Made me so fucking mad.
Oh, get fucked.
What's the point in reporting on the crime if you're not going to report it on it properly? Do you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Tell the truth, the whole truth, or nothing
but
the truth.
You need to tell people because, like, if you're, you know, there's a load of other young couples in the area.
Exactly.
Like, are you going to go to the same place and then, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you'll see from
you need to
the second attack, that's a kind of exactly what happened.
Oh,
so the second attack happened exactly nearly to the date, a month later, on March 24th. And it was a World War II veteran, and his name was Richard Griffin, and he was 29. His girlfriend, Polly Ann Moore, was 17, and they were both shot dead on that same Lover's Lane on Richmond Road. Richard had been shot twice in the back of the head and he was found slumped over the driver's seat. This is fucking kind of difficult as well. Polly was found sprawled out in the back seat of the car. She'd also been sexually assaulted in the same manner and she'd been shot twice in the back of the head. But evidence was found outside of the car that kind of led the police to suspect that they were murdered outside and then placed in the car, posed and ready to be found.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. So did it indicate that the rape happened post-mortem or
while
she was still alive?
They never said. I actually don't think it was post-mortem. I'd say it's the same that was going to happen to Marianne where he had tackled her, assaulted her and then was going
then
to kill her.
Jesus.
So I'd say he, and then just kind of put her in a very, what would you call it, a provocative pose, you know, like lying.
Provocative. You forgot the V. But yeah,
That's the way I speak.
That's not a good statement. That is not a good statement for what's happening.
But even like for the first girl, that she survived and like that would have been her. You know, like if you got kidnapped and you survived and it was like just not a one-time thing, but like you didn't.
Yeah.
But for the exact same guy to do the exact same thing, I know that you just missed it.
Yeah.
And that he nearly, like, I'd say he escalated. He probably killed the boyfriend straight away.
Yeah, that's
rather
it.
Rather than knocking him out because he learned from...
Yeah, Ben. Like not that Jimmy was able to do anything the last time because like he had his fucking skull fractured in three places and wasn't able to do anything, but I think you're right, is it like took out the boyfriend just in case,
just to get that release of the murder, because obviously this is, I feel like it's a sexually motivated killing.
It's the gratification of it, like being able to catch the woman and taking down the man
as well, of like you're taking another man's girl and like
exactly
and
he's not even raping her to get himself off with, you know, the normal form of rape. He's raping her with an object. Yeah. So it's the power of it all.
Yeah.
Oh, sick fuck.
It's so disgusting.
So a .32 caliber slug was actually found at the scene of the crime, but potential footprints were washed away by the rain. It's fucking typical.
Now, how did they find any evidence here, in Ireland?
To me, the most upsetting attack, and I think it's purely because how young they are, and if you were to see pictures of the two of them, they literally look like babies. It's fucking horrible. Aww.
I'm not ready.
No. So the third attack would take place on April 14th and this would be the Phantom's youngest victim. So Betty Jo Booker was 15 and Paul Martin was 16 and the two of them had been like best friends since they were 5. Like they were childhood friends, they lived down the road together, they did everything that they could together. Mm. And I know. Mary had been playing the saxophone in her musical group called the Rhythmaries and she'd do this every Saturday night. I think they'd go to like a little club, but obviously like kids were allowed in there back in the day, do you know what I mean? Like there wasn't a thing to say that they couldn't. And they'd usually finish up about 1:30 every morning and Paul was 16 so he was able to drive. So every Saturday night, to save her parents going, he'd go and collect her and bring her home.
Right.
Yeah. So this time, however, they stopped at Spring Lake Park and it was only about 5 minutes down the road from Betty's house, like was not far at all. But the pair never returned home. So a massive search party was set up and the following morning, Paul's body was found at North Parkwood Road and he'd been shot a total of 4 times. One bullet entered the back of his neck and exited through the front of his head.
Oh.
One in the shoulder, one in the hand, and the final one was in his face.
That's such an odd trajectory. Like that seems
below. Yeah. So as in like he could have been like kneeling or he could have been standing and the Phantom like came up, I don't know, fucking behind him, like, but underneath, because it went, clearly it went up.
Like, through the neck and out the top of your head. That is, that's really strange.
It's an odd one. And he's 16, so I'm not going to imagine, like, he's a big fucking tall teenager, do you know what I mean? And even if you see a picture of him, like, you know he was just the sweetest little
kid. Yeah, I just looked him up there and he had a really babe face, like.
So cute.
He looks so young.
I'm too emotional today to be looking at pictures of this. I need to stay disassociated as possible right now.
It's very sad, like if you've just seen the picture of the two of them. But Betty was actually found hours later, nearly 2 miles away from Paul.
Oh.
And her body was propped up behind a tree and she'd been shot in the face and the chest. And like the other two, she was also like sexually assaulted. But then Paul's car was found 3 miles away from where Betty was found, with the key still in the ignition. So
he drove the car off?
He drove the car off. Yeah.
Oh my god.
To get away.
Huh.
And I don't know, because she was found so far away from Paul, did he let her run away? Like, do you remember he was doing to Mary and then chased her down?
And she got further than the rest.
She got further, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he just, like, propped her up behind the tree.
Well, if she was as young as she was, you know, wasn't there that whole, like, I don't know, you know, they kind of would have ages where you could start maybe wearing makeup and, like, wearing heels.
Yeah, she did look a lot older than Paul did, despite being, like, a year younger. So I'd say, yeah, she was probably performing, Josh. She might have had, like, her little stage makeup on. Was looking well.
But I think Quiva was trying to say that she probably wasn't wearing high heels, so she probably
she was.
Yeah.
Because you know how they had like very specific kind of ages where you could start doing things.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Yeah.
Like start off then like when you're probably like 17, 18 with like a little kitten heel and then like
you weren't allowed to curl your hair until I don't know, I read that somewhere that they were kind of some families were quite strict about like when you could do certain things.
Yeah, my family could be like that, you don't know, yeah, exactly. So as days passed, obviously community was overrun by fear and the town collectively decided that they were going to do like a voluntary curfew. So come 6 o'clock, nobody has gone out of their house and nobody had an issue with it. Like they were fucking terrified. So
hear that, COVID-19 people? No one had an issue with it. It's for your own safety. Isn't that ironic?
Unless you're going out to peacefully protest, which by that case, go ahead.
Yes.
So shops obviously had an upsale in guns and in ammo and people were actually starting to fortify their own homes with like DIY alarms. Do you remember that episode of The Walking Dead where they set up like a series of pots and pans outside the house? That's what people were doing.
I'm smart. I can't argue with it. I think I probably loads
did
the same.
Loads of did it. Like. And then some mothers would even stay in hotels with their kids while the husbands were out working because they didn't know. It was just an exclusively lover's lane attack or out in secluded areas. Obviously, you know, you can't predict an entity that you don't know. Do you know? But the young people, obviously, of the town knew that their own were being attacked. Like, people their age were exclusively being attacked at the time.
Yeah.
And so they were desperate to, like, catch them, even if it was them that caught them. So one night, a deputy called Tillman Johnson had noticed a car parked up in a secluded area while he was out on patrol. So obviously, he approached it, in his mind, probably ready to find another crime scene, you know? But when he approached the car, he found a couple cuddling in the back. So he identified himself and it's like, oh, are you guys okay? You know, you should be home. There's a curfew. Are you not afraid? There's a mass killer on the loose. And this young one in the back of the car, ballsy and it's fucking brazen, she goes like, you're the one that ought to be scared, mister. It's a good thing you told me who you are. I was ready for that killer. And it was then Tillman noticed a 25 caliber pistol she had been pointing at them for their entire conversation. She was ready for him.
Oh my God, she was baiting him.
Yeah.
Legend. So, absolute legend.
The couple were literally using themselves as bait to murder the fuck out of the
family.
Oh,
so much applause.
My God.
So much
amazing.
Applause. Adam, edit in the applause track because that moment needs it. Oh my God.
Goosebumps.
This
is
so
amazing.
Well done, guys. Well done.
It's about to get depressing, so don't celebrate.
Ruining my life.
You're welcome. It's what I live for. So, obviously, we've just been told that the town have been taking serious preparations to try stop any attack that they feel like is coming.
Mm-hmm.
But the final victims had already been selected.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So it was May 3rd and Virgil Stark was 37 and he was at his ranch home listening to his favourite radio station late at night, right? When suddenly two shots were fired through a closed window and the boat hit him in the back of the head. Now hearing the shots, he was just dawdling about at his home. He wasn't anywhere. He was in his house.
And you said he was 27?
No, 37.
So 37?
It's a complete change in MO.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get to that. So his wife comes barreling down the stairs. Her name's Kate. I forgot to say it. But Kate comes barreling down the stairs. But by the time she reaches the step, he's still standing up and kind of staggering about the place like he's been shot. So he's dying,
but hasn't
hit the ground yet. And she sees him slump over the chair and die in front of her eyes.
Oh my God.
But quick thinking. Kate is a champ. Obviously, that's horrible and she shouldn't have ever had to see that happen. And it's fucking traumatizing. But she runs straight to the phone to try call 911. But as soon as she picks up the fucking phone, she is shot twice through the same window and it hits her. But it only scrapes the top of her head. So she hits the floor.
Oh.
Yeah, no, she hits the shit, like, she hits the ground like a fucking pile of shit, obviously. And she's blinded now by her own blood. She can't see a thing, but she knows there's a pistol on the counter. So she grabs it because she can hear him now, the phantom coming through the window that he had just shot through. Right. So she fucking legs it and she runs to the neighbour's house and gets there safely. The phantom doesn't try to get her and she calls 911. So this obviously now has set off an even bigger fucking, what would you even say? I don't know. The town were even more scared now because he's not stalking secluded areas anymore. He's coming to people's houses. And I'd say it is because of the curfew, because every, like, by the looks of it, obviously by those teenagers that were trying to shoot him, everybody else was like abiding by it. So
yeah,
his prey is not coming to him, so he's going to them. Christ. So the investigation at the ranch led to the discovery of a flashlight, bloody footprints. So he'd obviously gone into the house because, remember, Kate could hear him. Probably trapped in her husband's and her blood and then left. And shells belonging to a 22 caliber rifle. So he was at from, like, a distance. And that's why many questioned if it actually was the Phantom's work, because the MO was different and the weapon was different as opposed to the other three. But police still determined that this was the Phantom's work. And nothing came of this. Nothing. Years have passed, plenty of theories were suggested as to who the Phantom was, why he committed these crimes. Along with the theories came a lot of false confessions. So a student at the University of Arkansas called H.B. Tennyson admitted to the murders in 1948. So he committed suicide at age 18 and confessed to them in a suicide note. But there was no proof as to why it was him, or do you know what I mean? Like, there was
nothing linking him to it.
That's what they're saying.
Mm. Yeah, because he'd like
a Henry Lee Lucas situation.
You know when people like confess to stuff? Like, if you were to confess to something you did years and years ago, you're going to give loads of little details to prove that it was you, because there's no reason otherwise that you've confessed only to get attention. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's bullshit, basically, is what I'm saying.
So there, look, because like you said there, that there was no evidence to support that he did it. So it was just like, I'm the Phantom.
Yeah.
Gotta kill myself now, bye.
Yeah. Like, he'd throw in a bit of detail or, you know, a little bit of like, oh, this is where she was, you know, but like...
That'd be like me hanging myself in the morning going, oh, by the way, I was the Zodiac Killer.
Do you now know what I mean about the Zodiac Killer? As in, like, it was all young couple. Yeah,
100%.
But, no, like, he had nothing written in the note that would actually implicate him. It was just, oh, I am the Phantom, I kill, blah, 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 blah. This is my confession.
Because there's so much information that's never released to the public, so, like...
Because they really just got rid of him as an option pretty much straight away.
Because, so, like, the rapes weren't even released to the public. So even if he had said, like, I raped her with the barrel of my gun or whatever, then that would have been enough, you know?
Yeah.
Or, like, oh, I left them here or anything, like, you know? Like,
the first girl, I let her run away because I knew she was wearing high heels and wouldn't get far.
Yeah.
Something stupid like that, that, like, they'd be like, okay, that's fair enough. That's real. Yeah, just saying I am this person is just, like, I could say I'm fucking Queen Elizabeth.
Some sort of motive as to why he would want to do it. Like, you know, I got off on it or whatever, you know?
Well, it's nice to believe that it was him and that he did, like, kind of put a stop to himself, I suppose. But at the same time, I don't believe that it was him.
Like, no, even you don't pull off an atrocity like that with the rape and the aggression in the murder and then go kill yourself because of it. If you're killing people like that, you don't feel guilty.
No, you're
not going to kill yourself because you're a sadomasochist.
Yeah.
You don't have that part to, you know.
You don't have
to. Trying to say you're not going to want to come back.
No, yeah, yeah.
You're not going to.
It's very much self-preservation. Like those
exactly. Yeah. You
like narcissists,
kind of
sociopaths.
Almost, yes, you'd almost have like a godlike opinion of yourself.
Of course, yeah, exactly.
Well, it's all self-preservation. That's like basically the only like normal instinct that they have.
Yeah.
Aside from, I don't know, being hungry sometimes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's like
self-preservation is all they have.
Yeah. It's anything to satisfy their urges, and their urges aren't the urges of normal people.
Exactly.
Like, we just kind of want to, like, get laid every now and again, but... Like,
killed, like, what? It was a 6 people?
Five.
5 people, yeah. Mm. For... To fucking laugh, like, just for his own little...
Yeah.
For his, like, own enjoyment.
Crack, like.
It would have been, what, 8?
It would have been altogether? 8 if the others didn't survive.
If the first two didn't survive and if the last girl didn't
if get
away.
If it had worked out well, how he wanted it to work out,
Providing that it was the Phantom that shot through the windows.
Like, it's quite possible that he just changed his MO and moved.
Because, like, that, there was the curfew... He's not going to be breaking into people's houses. They lived on a ranch, so he could probably just hide out in the grass fields and just shoot right through that window.
Teenagers aren't an easy target anymore because they're going to be at home with their parents. So you're going to have to kill so many more people just to get to your teenagers.
Yeah.
So
and it's still secluded in the fact that it's a ranch. Like, you're not going to have a next door neighbour that's right beside your house. It's going to be a little bit, like, ways away. Do you know what I mean? It's not like it's, like, in a, like, a terraced house where the houses are literally joined together. Like, now, so... 400 people were questioned about the attacks. Thousands of bits of evidence was gathered.
Texas Rangers were called in to solve the case.
And even the famous lone wolf, Manuel T. Gonzalez. So he's literally kind of the real-life version of Texas... what's his name? Walking Texas Ranger.
Kind of a bounty hunter, kind of.
Literally. Amazing. Like, in real life,
like
him.
Like a bounty hunter,
kind of. In real life, him. Like, the best of the best. Like, he's
no, Texas Rangers aren't bounty like hunters, Grievous.
Texas Rangers.
No, I'm talking about that one guy she's talking about, or was he a Texas Ranger?
He's a Texas Ranger.
Oh, sorry, yeah. I thought he was, like, an independent
fella.
You know
he's a Texas Ranger. Are you thinking of Dog the Bounty
the
Hunter?
Bounty yeah, hunter.
No, but you know what?
The Bounty Hunter.
There was often, like,
hunter.
People used to be bounty hunters, and they
such great make them off. So, their main suspect was Ewell Swinney, right? A state trooper for Arkansas started an investigation into car thefts because he noticed the night of every attack, a car would be reported stolen.
Oh!
Mm-hmm. So, a disgruntled landlord reported Ewell for failing and refusing to pay for his rent. So, he handed over his address and his license plate. And once they were, back-checked, they found that he was actually driving a stolen car that went, you know, well, that got stolen on the night of the second attack.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And his wife Peggy also implicated him in the murder. And she told the police like very specific details of the murder of Paul Martin, though the youngest lad, he was like 16, very in detail what had happened to him, right? But then she started to change her tune and she started giving conflicting statements, retracted her confession, and she said that she would never stand against her husband. So now with no solid evidence, Peggy's refusal to testify.
Peggy, you fucking wet
Ewell
blanket.
You couldn't even be charged.
Why would you come forward just to not do anything?
I don't know. Like, was
he probably threatened her life, I assume.
Could have. We don't know.
You know, she got a bit ballsy, tried to turn him in, and then he was like, yeah, I'm going to end your fucking life if you keep talking about me. And then, like, never mind.
I think, like, from what I was reading, I could be wrong, and I could have just read it elsewhere. But, like, this was all in the one sitting.
Oh, okay. Oh.
I think, I don't know, like...
Maybe fear, I don't know if fear she, got the better of her, or she her, was just lying to begin with, or she lied afterwards. Yeah. Fuck knows. We can't, we weren't there. We can't speculate.
Yeah, maybe she was sick at him and was just trying to set him up and then feel bad or something.
Could have, yeah. Because he's not the greatest fucking character anyway, because he would constantly steal cars and ended up serving 31 years for auto theft.
31
years? So I don't
years.
Know... 31, yeah, because it was constant.
Okay,
we all
fair enough.
Like, constantly. So I don't know if he was just, like, a normal car thief and just happened to steal a car on the night that the Phantom did his attack.
Yeah.
And that it was actually nothing got to do with him. But obviously it's still a bit fucking sketch that Peggy was able to tell the police
specific details
about Paul's murder.
Yeah.
Do you know? But what I find funny then about that is she never mentioned anything about the rapes, which wasn't known to the public. So why is she only reporting on the lad's murder and not the girl's if she really knew anything about that case? Because if the public didn't know, how would she know that the girl was raped? But she never mentioned it in the first place. So, like, did she actually ever really know?
Yeah, like, if you knew...
Do you know what I'm trying to say?
It's a very big detail to, like, know that had been left out of what was in the public eye. That you'd mention it if you wanted to prove it.
Exactly, if you wanted them to believe you, you're going to mention the one detail that nobody else knows.
Because you know nobody else knows, yeah, exactly.
Exactly, so, like... No one was ever formally charged with the murder, right? And I know we're after having, like, this discussion as to why we don't think it, but the Phantom was never heard again as soon as Ewell was arrested for the car thefts. And people don't know if it's by the time, because he served 31 years, and he was about 30, 40 when he got arrested. So by the time he got out of prison in 1978, was he just too old and couldn't do any more attacks? Or was it never him in, like, the first place and the Phantom was simply a drifter?
It could just be a case of, like, it didn't happen in that area, but the Phantom moved on.
And how did they prove that the one that was on the ranch was him?
They never did.
They never said.
Because that could have just been, like, a copycat.
Could have been a copycat. It could have been an isolated murder where somebody wanted the wife and went after her, or they just wanted to kill and they were like, hey, there's other killings going on, so we're going to murder now too.
See, that's
the only thing
like,
I can imagine that might have connected them is that they found footprints at other scenes, and the footprint that they found in the blood may have matched the size and brand of shoe.
Yes.
If the, like, rain didn't wash the other ones away. And that's it. They don't know.
They're just presuming.
And I think it is the fact that, as well, they thought he was up in his game now. To the fact that the curfew had been set in place, people were arming up.
I think when serial killers
were setting fucking DIY alarms,
bopping around, that there's always, like, opportunists. Yeah. You're like, I'm just going to slide in here, take out who I want to take out, and it'll get pinned on that fella.
Yeah, so obviously, now that nobody got any peace They didn't know who he was, why he did it, leaving the Phantom, like his identity, forever elusive. And it left the small town crippled by fear that it would dread sundown for years to come. And that is the story of the Moonlight Murders. And funnily enough, right, they have two films out. They're both great. It's called The Town That Dreaded Sundown. And do you remember the whole shenanigans in Riverdale about the Black Hood?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's inspired by these killings.
Oh my God.
Because I was literally thinking while it was happening, I was like, this sounds like a Riverdale episode. And then now I know why I was thinking that. And I've actually seen The Town That Dreaded Sundown. So how I never caught that I've seen that movie before is beyond me.
Yeah. Now, obviously, our Hollywood heavily dramatised what happened. Like, there was even one where this girl was strapped to a tree and the Phantom had a saxophone. So obviously it was meant to be Mary, with a knife on the end of the saxophone, and had her tied to the tree so her back was exposed, and any time he blew the trumpet or the saxophone or whatever.
Yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. It would stab her in the back.
Yep.
So it was a trumpet, not a saxophone, but like, it was obviously meant to be modelled after Mary, considering she was a musician.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Or not Mary, Betty, sorry. But like, stupid shit like that. That
sensationalizes.
They obviously heavily dramatised. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Like, so my sources for this week's episode came from the 1976 and 2004 movies that I've just mentioned, The Town That Dreaded Sundown. Obviously, you have to take them with a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And then Wikipedia, because always, and don't expect anything less, and Morbidology.com, and they're also a podcast, so go give them a listen too. They're very good.
Awesome.
And that is me.
That was a horrific story, thank you. That has truly ruined my Sunday and has probably ruined the Friday of all of our listeners. So that's great.
You're welcome.
I guess it's on to me. So basically what I did was I popped onto Wikipedia as well. I had just a quick search for unsolved murders, and I set the time frame from, I do believe it was 1925 up to 1935. Mm. I think that was my time frame that I set. And I came across this one, which is apparently a super famous case, but I had never heard of it before I started researching it. And this is called the Wallace case. So there is a bunch of documentaries on it and a bunch of like books written about it and stuff like that. But what I chose to use for my source was outline.com, because they condensed all of the information into as short as you possibly could, but it's still hella long. It took me like 3 days just to read through it and organize it. It took me 12 hours to write my notes. So it's a lot, and this is the condensed version, as condensed as I could get it. So I'm going to try and go quickly through it, because there's a lot of background on the victim, her husband, and an acquaintance who I will get into it, but I strongly suspect him for the murder. So I'm just going to blast through the information on the people as much as possible, and then I'll kind of take it a little bit chiller through the day before the event happened and the day of. So let's get started on that. So, the victim. Julia Wallace was born Julia Dennis on the 28th of April 1861 in North Riding of Yorkshire, England, to William George Dennis and Anne Theresa Dennis. Julia was orphaned 2 months before her 14th birthday, and she had been living in Leeds in 1892 when she was 31, but she wouldn't meet William Herbert Wallace until 1911 in Harrogate, and married him 3 years later in the parish church of St. Mary's on the 24th of March 1914. So it was believed that William was unaware of Julia's true age, as her marriage certificate claimed she was 37, when she was actually a month away from being 53.
What? Yeah. How great was her skin?
And that's what I'm thinking, like, how young must she have looked for him to actually believe she was 37.
I'm going to look like a ball bag when I'm 50. Like,
I already look like a ball bag, and I'm 24. And her gravestone showed her age to be 52, which didn't even line up with her marriage certificate, let alone the fact that she was actually 69 upon her death. So
she's a time traveller, only explanation.
And that was in 1931 when she died. So it in fact seemed that William knew very little about the truth of his wife's life, as he knew nothing of her siblings aside from one of her sisters, Amy, and believed her mother and father, who were realistically a simple farmer and a country housewife, were actually a veterinary surgeon, and that her mother was Amy, she changed her name to like Amy, of French origin.
What, to be fancy, yeah. Stop
yeah, exactly
it.
That.
Amy, get over yourself.
So it's believed that due to their deaths at the beginning of her life, it caused her to glamorize them, and this fantasy alienated her from her siblings. So that's why he didn't really know about them, we think. So witness accounts after her death claim she had been an invalid for many years, and that the coroners had found that after you know, after her murder, they found she'd been wearing a type of incontinence undergarment. It was basically like a homemade nappy that was kept together with a pin. So then much more information is known about William Herbert Wallace, who was her husband. He was born in Cumbria on the 29th of August, 1878, after his mother and father, Marjorie and Benjamin, had moved there from Coniston in the Lake District. When he was 10 years old, the family moved to Blackpool, but he was struck down with typhoid fever and they returned to Cumbria. He left boarding school at 14 and took employment at a draper's as a draper's assistant in Walney Island. William is described as outdoorsy, interested particularly in football and cricket, and being a distinctly cultured mind with a keen interest in science, botany, history and the writings of Greek and Roman philosophers. So he was a smart cookie.
Fucking nerd.
And personally attacked because, like... I too enjoy Greek and Roman philosophy. But he was also a keen violinist, enjoyed chess and loved nature, being reported as once convincing Julia to come on a late night walk with him to Stanley Park to watch the effect of frost on the plants and trees. Which I don't know why, but I think that's so cute.
Oh, fuck off. Like, seriously. Oh my God. If a lad ever said that to me, I'd be like, what are you on about?
I mean, it's 1911. Like, looking at the what frost. What are they going to do? Watch
appear on the grass. Then, Lizzie.
Go for a walk.
They did go for a walk.
I don't give
go
a shit what it is. Go on.
Yeah, but like, not to no, watch frost.
The purpose of the walk was to watch.
No, Savannah, that is
frost
not normal.
Form on grass. It's like watching paint dry. It's I'm sorry. Worse. There's no excuse. That was shite. That was shite.
Paint only takes a couple of hours to dry. Frost probably takes, I don't know how long. A long
it
time?
Really wouldn't take that long.
Like, it's not going to be it like a Dementor in Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
And he comes out, they do everything fucking like frosts over like this. Like, this is going to be a long thing. Do you know what I'm saying? Embarrassed for him anyway, go on.
Look, he just sounded like he was a bit of a romantic. Leave him be. His wife was murdered, you heartless bitches.
He's probably one that fucking did it, so I don't even feel bad.
I strongly don't think so, but you can make your own conclusion when I finish. Okay. So in 1905, Wallace moved to Shanghai, where his brother worked as a printer. However, he was to be disappointed when an old kidney complaint acted up and he was advised by doctors to return to England. After resigning his position with his employer, he returned in 1907 and within the month had surgery to remove his left kidney.
That would have been great back then.
Yeah. So basically, he was sick as fuck. Like, he's been sick his whole life. Like, he puts me to shame with illnesses. Between 1928 and 1930, he suffered several more bouts of illness, one resulting in him being hospitalised for over a month. Wallace's diary at times would record him speaking affectionately of his wife, how they played music together, and after her death, how he yearned for her, and how she would have loved his new home on the Wirral Peninsula. However...
Lad, can I ask you a question? What the fuck is a peninsula? I think
it's that, like, kind of jut out of land. You know what I mean? I think that's
all
what
right,
a peninsula
okay.
is.
Right, okay, sorry. I had to ask because I haven't got it. I can try to picture it in my head, but I haven't got a notion what
it
is.
It would equally record his frustrations with her for her tit-for-tat illnesses, where she would take to her bed ill, in inverted commas, after William would recover. So, like, basically, he'd be sick, and then as soon as he recovered, she was like, oh, I'm so sick, and then go to bed. And, yeah.
It's my turn to be ill.
How she had a lower intellect than his, and how she had to be reminded of their 15th wedding anniversary as she left the day pass as a non-event. So Wallace's doctor, Dr. Kerwin, was a frequent caller to 29 Wolverton Street, which is where the couple lived, and reported Julia implying that he was malingering, that he wanted to stay at home. So she's basically like, he's faking it. He just wants to stay in bed. Even though, you know, man had one kidney and the other one was basically shutting down.
She does sound like a bit of a bitch.
I'm not going to lie. She really does. Upon being told that his health condition was, in fact, very serious, William shrugged it off as he said, just have to carry on regardless. So he just had to get on with it because, like, he was getting no sympathy at home. And being stoic would later lead the police to believe his cold-heartedness meant his guilt. So now we have an acquaintance. His name is Richard Gordon Parry.
A friend.
And there's a reason I'm bringing him up and it'll come up later. But yeah. Richard Gordon Parry was born on the 12th of January 1909 in Liverpool. He was a handsome youth but did not do well academically, instead turning his interest to the creative art of acting, which continued into his adult life, joining a dramatic society that would meet in Cottle City Cafe in North John Street, the very same venue where William Herbert Wallace used to play chess. Parry was convicted as a youth for property damage in juvenile court for pulling down a boundary wall that was under construction on his way to and from school every day. So twice a day this little fucker is pulling down a wall that's been built. Like,
Little bastards.
Yeah. This would mark the beginning of a long and very criminal career. Now, I'm not going into the amount of things that he actually did, but it was like Grand Theft Auto and burglary and theft. Like, it's a whole lot.
Very shifty. But he's a very shifty
like
character.
Like I said, I do not have the time to go into the minute details of every single person in this case. So, when Parry left school, he took employment as an insurance salesman, where Wallace also worked with Prudential, but found the meagre wage scarcely allowed him to indulge his extravagant taste for wine, women and cars. In December 1928, the teenage Parry took over part of Wallace's rounds during one of his frequent bouts of illness. He would visit the Wallaces to pay the takings, which William would keep in a tin atop a bookcase. He struck up a friendship with Julia, who he described as sweet and charming. As William was checking the books, he noticed that Parry hadn't been paying the full amounts collected and confronted him, to which Parry apologised and said it had been an oversight, paying back the difference out of pocket. However, it was not the first time such an oversight had happened. Oversight being also in inverted commas, because was it fucking oversight?
Mm-hmm. Fucking women and booze, that's exactly yeah. what it was.
It was straight up theft, and he was hoping to the best yeah. that nobody noticed. Yeah. But a few months earlier, he had been short paying into Prudential head office, which his father paid for to stop Parry from losing his job. John Parks, who worked at Atkinson's all-night garage and taxi service, said that although many clients were welcome to drop in for a late-night drink or chat, Parry was not one of them, as he had been found going through a locker looking for money and would let himself into the kitchen, randomly calling people he didn't know and using his acting training to change his voice. Remember that detail.
Oh, he's yeah. sketchy. Mm-hmm.
Just remember that detail because I feel like it's very important. Okay. In 1966, Parry... So this is long after the murder, because it's like 30 years after. Parry yeah. would pass off his various offences in an interview as childish hijinks, but would refuse to talk about the Wallace case. Not if you paid me £2,000. He had promised his father he wouldn't talk about it, and also let off the impression that he knew a lot more detail about the case. He claimed Wallace was sexually odd and that he would call on Julia for tea and musical interludes. He literally said we would make sweet music together. So if that's not yeah. like, yeah, that's a sexual innuendo if I ever heard 100%. One in my life. Though it seemed yeah. from William Wallace's diary entries that he was unaware of this. So now, the day before, Monday the 19th of January 1931, William decides to return to work after being laid up the previous week with his second bout of the flu in 6 weeks. It was now
poor hooer, like.
Yeah, the poor fucker. Like, he was constantly sick. Constantly. It was now Julia's turn to be ill, having developed a chesty cough. So bless her, she was actually sick this time. As William leaves for work at 10 a.m, he suggests that she calls Dr. Kerwin, which she does. In the evening, Wallace returns home for tea and decides to pay a long overdue visit to the chess club, as he had a tournament match that night. He had to make it there by 7:45 p.m. and commence playing or there would be penalties. He leaves the house by the back door at 7:15 p.m. to make his way for the tram line to bring him into town. At this precise time, Louisa Alfreds receives a call at the telephone exchange by someone looking to be connected to Bank 3581, which was Cottle City Cafe.
Oh, that's the place that they met.
She connects yeah. the call. Yeah, that's where they met for the chess club and also where the Drama Society met. So she connects the call, hears a voice answer and hangs up. A few minutes later, a colleague received a second call from the man, claiming he pressed A, but had not been connected. After calling the supervisor, they noticed that, upon checking, she saw that he had actually pressed B, which disconnected him and returned his money. Bit strange, but they didn't think much of it at the time. They reconnected him, and this time they got him through to the cafe. So Gladys Harley was a waitress at the cafe, and she took the call and recalls a man with a gruff voice asking, "Is William Wallace there?" The waitress then summoned Samuel Beatty to the phone, and the man again asked if Wallace was there, asked for his address, which Beatty refused to give, and then said he needed to speak to Wallace about something in the nature of his business for his daughter's 21st birthday. Now, he's an insurance salesman, so I'm not quite sure what that would mean.
I was going to say, because it's William Wallace, isn't he? Like, fucking Braveheart. In my head, I'm just saying, like, they may want to take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom.
Take our freedom.
Fucking great film.
He gives his name as R.M. Quailthrough. Weirdest name.
Shite name. Sorry.
Living at 25 Menlove Gardens East, and that Wallace should meet him there at 7:30 p.m. the next evening. Now, remember that the first... I'm not going to mention R.M. Quailthrough again. It's just going to be Quailthrough when I'm mentioning the name. But just remember that it's R.M. because I made a connection that I'm not sure should be right. a connection or not, but I just found it interesting. I'll get there. So the message is passed on to Wallace, and he remarks about how Quailthrough was such an odd name that he didn't know him, but he jotted down the address in a black book. So after 10 p.m, Wallace was thrilled to have won his chess game, and he returned home with a close neighbour, James Caird, and again on the walk discussed the odd name Quail Through and how Wallace might not go yet, before leaving Caird at his home and heading home himself. Julia is still up pottering about the kitchen despite being sick. So they eat a light supper and go to bed together. Now we're into the details. The day began grey and rainy. So William Wallace left the house at 10:30 a.m. for his usual rounds wearing a bowler hat and Macintosh. At 11:30 a.m, now I know I seem to be mentioning just a lot of random timelines, but the timelines are super, super important for all of this.
Right.
At 11:30 a.m, Julia is home alone when she is called upon by Arthur Hoare. Also, Hoare, what a great last name.
Poor. He got slagged so much, don't you know?
So bullied, like.
Asking for a bucket of... Oh, actually, sorry. I'm such a tangent at the moment, but, like, the best name I've ever heard in my life is coming up because it's one of the police superintendents and you're going to love it. But it's on the way.
Oh, my God.
So she was called upon by Arthur Hoare asking for a bucket of warm water for window cleaning in the area, which she provided. So, you know, you've got Arthur and his wife now. They're baiting around cleaning the windows. So, you know, a lot of people are seeing Julia alive. Yeah. At 2 p.m, William returns for his lunch, leaving again at 3:15 p.m, swapping his Macintosh for his fawn overcoat as the rain had let up. Remember the Macintosh, that's important too.
What the fuck's a Macintosh?
It's just basically a raincoat.
Yeah, it's like, you know those like really like waxy, they're kind of, I think they're called like wax?
Mm. Yeah, I know, I can picture it in my head now,
like,
yeah.
No one really wears them anymore, but like... You know the coat. You know it.
They're booze.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. So he swapped out his Macintosh for his fawn overcoat as the rain had let up. Shortly after he leaves, Amy Wallace calls on Julia for a chat. Now, Amy Wallace was his sister-in-law, so she was...
The one that he knew.
Yeah, she was married to his brother, so they had come back from Shanghai as well.
Oh, yeah.
So she calls on Julia for a chat. William is seen by multiple people on his rounds, most reporting that his demeanour was to be the same as usual, with Mrs. Louisa Harrison recalling him joking with her. At 4 p.m, Julia and Amy are interrupted by Neil Norbury delivering the Wallace's bread. 4:30 p.m, Amy Wallace leaves and Charles Bliss takes over the window cleaning for Arthur Hoare because he got called away, with Hoare's wife for the Wallace house and their neighbours John and Florence. William returns home at 6:05 and joins Julia in the kitchen for tea and scones. Around 6:30 p.m, William collects documents he may need for his business with Mr. Quailthrough, washed his hands and face and changed his collar and brushed his hair. At 6:45 p.m, he left the house through the back door with Julia walking into the back gate and he instructing her to bolt the back door when she returned inside, as was their usual practice. On his search for Menlove Gardens East, Wallace covers a distance of approximately 4 miles before reaching Menlove Gardens North and beginning his search for Quailthrough. After asking 3 individuals where the address is and being told there is no such place, he decides to try 25 Menlove Gardens West, in case the address was given to him wrong. He arrives at the home of Richard Mather, with his wife answering the door.
Wait.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
RM.
RM.
It's exactly what I thought. I was like, 25 Menlove Gardens East and 25 Menlove Gardens West. And RM Quailthrough, Richard RM. Mather.
It's a connection.
I'm not going to say it's a connection, like... but it just seems a bit suspicious to me.
A bit too fucking, yeah.
Right? It just seems too coincidental.
That's the word I was looking for, but couldn't finish it.
Yeah.
I could see it in my head, but I couldn't get it out.
From what I've seen, there was no connection to that made at all. It was never looked into.
True. So. That's because they never had us. They're just all...
Exactly.
It would have been the bright and brilliant that we had.
There was no Sylvester and Tweety's Unsolved Mysteries going on. So... Yeah, so she again was expressing that there was no one by the name of Quailthrough there. So he left. At around 8:10 p.m, Wallace decided to give up his search and he head to the tram lines to return home. He is seen by and had spoken to 11 people on his search. So from the minute he left the house and got on the tram lines to the minute he decided to give up, he spoke to 11 people. He went to a post office. He went to like look for a registry to try and find.
He was very, very visible. Like he made himself. Yeah,
it was really obvious. Like
it's very obvious that he was out of the house at this point. However, later the prosecution would try to claim that Wallace went out of his way to speak to as many people as possible to build a solid alibi. So Wallace returns to Wolverton Street at 8:45 p.m. He tries his key in the front door, but it won't turn. And there's no response from Julia when he knocks. So he tries the back door, but again, no response. At this point, John and Florence emerge from their garden. Remember, John and Florence are the next door neighbours.
Yeah.
They emerge from their garden and advise him to try the front door again. And if it was to fail, they would try it with their own key. So obviously they had a key to their house. So the door opens. And as William explains, Julia was ill, so she wouldn't have left the house. John and Florence decide to wait until they see if anything is wrong. After first checking upstairs, Wallace dashes out, exclaiming, "Oh, come and see, she's been killed."
Oh, come and see.
Mm-hmm. Have a look.
Wallace, no one's going to want to go fucking see that. What are you talking about? Ring 911.
I feel like it's 1930. They were just a bit more like, about things.
I know they're dramatic, but come on. Now's not the time for
drama. I thought, "Oh, come and see" was an odd thing to say as well, but I know, maybe he just wanted them to confirm with their own eyes that he wasn't imagining it. I don't know. They follow him to the lounge where Julia's body is lying diagonally across the black rug in front of the gas fire. She is face down with her head to one side and they can make out a huge wound above her left ear, revealing bits of her brain where her skull had been shattered. William grasps Julia's left hand, Florence noting that his face drained and he looked deathly pale and exclaimed, "They finished her."
Oh my gosh.
Who the fuck is
they? That's so ominous.
Yeah, there's some speculation about him saying they, because was it just a slip of the tongue or was he just saying they as like a generalised thing of like, you know, you didn't know who killed her, but someone killed her, like, you know?
Yeah.
So it could have been completely innocent or it could have meant, you know,
she knew.
There could have been something she wasn't meant to be killed, but they did kill her. There's a lot of speculation about it.
Yeah.
So John goes to fetch the police and the doctor. Florence and William go back to the kitchen where they notice that the cabinet has been broken into with the door being ripped off and broken in half. And his collections for Prudential had been taken, which only amounted to about £4.
That was no more a robbery, like the age old.
Exactly. Now, bit of background of the area at the time as well is that there was a string of burglaries going on during this as well. So the police were like kind of, you know, on edge for burglaries as it was.
Mm.
But, you know, it wouldn't have had a lot of money in it because he'd been out sick the week before. So he hadn't been collecting. He'd only been collecting for a day at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that had been taken. However, money upstairs, like in their bedroom, on the mantelpiece in the living room and in Julia's handbag, including some silver, had all been left untouched.
Nah.
And later when the coroners take her body, they also find she's still wearing her wedding ring. And I believe she had a brooch as well.
What's up the stairs? Because if they would have killed her, obviously that would have given them a bit of a fucking shock. Like, right, okay, we need to get out.
Yeah.
But the stuff that was actually lying on, like, her finger, like you said, her wedding ring and everything was left there. You're going to snatch that because it's so close to you and then you're going to scarf her.
And there was £6 left on the mantle, like, sticking out from under a thing. So
you're going to rob £4 and leave six and leave silver.
It was deliberately staged
to look like a robbery.
Yeah, it was definitely staged to look like a robbery, but whether it was
100%.
The killer decided to do that to try and pin it on the burglar that was going around at the time, or that Wallace instructed it to be staged as a burglary.
Yeah, like a burglary gone wrong kind of thing.
Mm. Either way, they did a terrible burglary job. So between 9:10 PM and 11:45 PM, police inspectors come and go from the house before William is taken to the station for a formal statement. So it's at 11:45 PM he's finally taken in for a statement. Further examination of Julia's body showed that she had a 3-inch wound to the left of her skull and a large depression to the back, with blood-matted hair hiding the wounds. There is no defensive wounds to her arms or hands, showing she didn't try to fight her attacker, and that the rest of her wounds were given when she was already face down. So basically, they assumed that she died.
She was attacked from behind, I think.
Yeah. They think she died within the first minute, and that they just kept bludgeoning her head afterwards.
Jesus.
Oh, fuck's sake.
Yeah. So there was a large pool of blood on the rug beneath her head, and William's Macintosh was found under the body, blood-stained and burned at the front and sides.
How would it be burned?
There's no explanation. And her underskirt, or her overskirt, sorry, was also found after they took her back to the coroner's office. That was found to be burnt at the front as well. It's very, very strange, and I've no explanation for it at all. But I do believe there is a reason as to why there's no explanation for it, but I'm getting there. There were bloodstains on the walls that reached 7 foot high. So it had been a sustained and frenzied attack. So that's how fucking hard and aggressive they were bashing her head in that the bloodstain spread 7 foot tall. So in total, Julia sustained 11 injuries to the head, each one delivered with more force than the last.
Ooh.
Here it is. Here it is. Here's my favourite name in the whole story.
I'm excited.
I should not be this excited, but Sergeant Adolphus Fothergill.
That is beautiful.
Is that not the best name you've ever heard in your life?
Considering the rest of the shit names that are in it.
Honestly.
Top tier.
Adolphus Fothergill.
Adolphus.
Such what a powerful name. Adolphus.
Isn't it? You wouldn't fuck with Adolphus.
It kind of sounds like a dolphin if you had like a lisp.
What nickname would you even give him?
Like Dolly. They called him Dolly.
Oh.
Which diminishes it terribly for such a powerful name, and then just the cutest nickname ever. Just, Dolly.
See, Daddy's probably like.
Yeah, but that means
like,
that's
nice. A nice old
like
man.
Really nice.
Do what I mean?
I'm so glad you actually asked a question I had an answer to. That was fabulous.
Oh my God.
Anyway, so Sergeant Adolphus Fothergill quickly established that the murderer would have been heavily bloodstained. The coroner, MacFall, now this asshole, originally put the time of death at 8 p.m, but later changed his mind to 6 p.m, even though Julia had been seen alive at 6:35 p.m.
Is he dumb?
He's very dumb. He also used the most unreliable method of determining the time of death, which was rigor mortis, because we all know that.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
That doesn't even, that's like.
There's 100.
Like that can change on, like, the conditions.
Yeah, given the temperature
and
stuff like that.
The room could be warm.
Exactly.
Or,
oh my God.
Too cold, yeah. Or blah, blah, blah.
Exactly that.
And even different people, like, I think if you're heavier, it's, different, or if you're skinnier, it's...
Absolutely. Rigor mortis is not an accurate way of determining a time of death. I know they didn't have a lot of, like, ways and means of determining it back then, but, like, you know, there was another one. For the life of me, I can't think of it now, but it was
a lot more.
But
why would you choose the worst one?
He deliberately chose the most unreliable one, so...
Yeah, but he was definitely one of the dickheads who's like, I actually know...
Yeah.
And exactly being lazy as
I
well.
I know best. Yeah. And it's like, no, you're just shit at
He'd
your job.
Also,
you know, one of those people who like won't like admit that there's like new ways.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%.
Proper old
school.
Like,
I can tell just by sniffing a body how long it's been dead. I mean, after like 4 days, yeah, you definitely can. But not in the first fucking few hours.
Yeah.
Anyway, not that he actually did say that. That's not a fact. That's me being sarcastic. So he also had originally said that she had 4 head wounds, but that it then later changed it to the 11. It's like, we'll kind of forgive that because she's got blood matted hair and stuff like that, but like, you know,
you're a coroner, it's your job to correct the
preliminary
count, the
examinations should be somewhat accurate still. So yeah, then the toilet had been used by the police for several hours before a blood clot was discovered in the bowl.
Could they not piss somewhere else, for fuck's sake?
Or could they not have checked out everything? Like, you're supposed to search everywhere for evidence before you start fucking pissing on the crime scene. Like,
my
it was literally
God.
An actual blood clot.
How much did they wash away?
Exactly.
Like?
Because it was, oh Lord, I didn't actually take down the measurement. I should have, but I think it was something like 3/4 of an inch in diameter or something like that. It was so small in the end. And the only thing they could determine was that it was of human origin and that it was not of menstrual origin.
Oh.
So it wasn't, you know, from
a blood
the
clot.
Monthly shame.
Yeah, from a...
It was...
Yeah.
It was a proper blood clot.
Yeah, it wasn't like from a police lady
exactly.
or something.
Or even from Julia herself because, you know, they thought she was still within menstruating age.
Yeah, I was going to say, because she was an old one. She would hit the men all, like, a lot of fucking earlier.
She was
maybe that's why
70,
she
like,
was such a nutter.
Oh, my God.
She was
so
going through
sense.
The men all, like, no wonder.
Yeah, and lying about it, and incontinent, and lying about that, too. So, yeah, makes sense. Anyway, so all in all, it was not a very professional job done by the police at the coroner
no.
up until this
our
point.
No,
at all.
We do better.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
We do better.
I mean, I feel like we definitely know how to treat a crime scene better than that. So later that night, now, you remember our good friend who worked in the garage, Parks, and our good friend, Parry.
That's neat.
So Parks reported that Parry came into the garage in an agitated state, demanding for his car to be hosed down inside and out, even though it appeared to be clean. Already sketch, gets worse. Upon opening the glove compartment, Parks discovered a leather mitt and he took it out so that it wouldn't get soaking wet from hosing down the car. And when he did so, he discovered that it was covered in blood. Parry snatched it, claiming, if the police found that, it would hang me.
That's a very fucking bold statement to make, Parry.
Mm-hmm. He continued to ramble about disposing of a bar down a grid outside the doctor's house on Priory Street.
Why are you telling people?
Yeah.
Why are
well,
he
clearly
so
got away with it because it was definitely him and it's unsolved.
Yeah,
but like,
thank you. It was never investigated. They never searched the fucking grid.
I'm sorry.
They clearly just didn't even want to solve this crime.
Don't give a shit.
They clearly, like, they didn't. Like, this would not have been hard to solve.
At all.
They looked at it as like spousal murder, whether it was or not, and that's it. They decided it was William Wallace, and they were pinning it in William Wallace. So,
nah, man. That's not right.
Parks confided in his boss about this event afterwards, after Parry had left, who told him, don't have anything to do with it. But should Wallace be convicted, they would have to tell the police. The Wallace's cleaner was later interviewed, and when questioned, she noted that an iron poker and a metal bar were missing from the house.
That was so fucking happened to be dropped down a grid.
You know what I mean? Everything points to this motherfucker. That's why I wrote down all the details about him. Yeah.
Shifty fucker.
But he didn't even try and hide it, and he still got away with it because they just didn't even try. Yeah. They weren't arsed looking.
Exactly. So,
Oh my God, so
Alan Close also reported delivering milk at 6:45 p.m., which was taken in by Julia, which contradicted the coroner's time of death even further.
Oh, she died at 6 o'clock. Did she? So now she's a fucking ghost now.
But this was ignored by police and prosecution.
So,
I don't know. I don't know. And they basically... Actually, no, I do have that written down. I thought I left it out as just a... You know, some of my notes I don't write down. I just remember them.
Yeah.
So, after Wallace was officially arrested, Parks kept his word and reported the information he had on Parry to Superintendent Hubert Moore.
Shite name yet again.
Who simply said... Poo-poo, you must have made a mistake.
Bit of a fucking underreaction, do you not think, Herbert?
Right?
A little, small bit.
Just like imagine calling up the police a bit like, I have solid evidence that it was this guy who committed the murder. It's just like, nah, don't think so. I don't feel like it was him, so you must have made a mistake.
This is irritating so much.
He believed that Wallace was his man and ignored all evidence contradicting that. It's making a murderer, just saying. Including the fact that William Wallace would not have been able to come home, kill Julia, stage a burglary and dispose of the murder weapons, blood and bloody clothes within 20 minutes of between being seen at the trams and being seen by the neighbours. Now remember, these guys, the police went off and they started trying to do the time trail of how long it would take him to get back to Wolverton Street from the tram lines. And it was, the times were kind of like 18 minutes, 20 minutes, 21 minutes, 22 minutes, 17 minutes. And 17 minutes was the shortest one, and they ran it.
How?
Now,
but then you're giving him 3 minutes to be able to murder, get rid of the weapon.
Exactly. And he was like, he had plenty of time. But tell me this now. Explain to me how William Herbert Wallace, who has been dying of various illnesses for so many years, known to be an invalid, is running. Mm-hmm. Tell me how he's running at all, never mind a distance of 17 minutes.
That really makes no sense.
It makes no
sense. Because he wasn't long after actually being like bedbound anyway.
He was down.
So what strength does he have? Do you know, even if yourself, you're lying in bed for 2 weeks, your legs go to shit, like you've no muscle.
That's like 3 kilometres or something. Like,
you'd probably cover
45 minutes.
Yeah, about that.
For
2 to 3 kilometres.
A 5K, like.
Yeah. So.
That's a fucking long run, like.
Yeah. There's absolutely. Now, look, I can't say whether William Herbert Wallace got his wife killed or whatever, but he definitely did not murder her himself.
No.
Despite that, after a lengthy trial, Wallace was found guilty and sentenced to death.
What? Yeah.
But thankfully, the conviction was overturned at an appeals process, given that the evidence was largely circumstantial. And the prosecution was leading the witnesses during trial.
Oh,
I read through some of the transcripts and it was just like, oh, but don't you think this is what happened? And but didn't you say that? And we're like, no, that's not what he said. And they were trying to put words in William's mouth, trying to say that he denied recognising his Macintosh, even though literally the first thing he did when he spotted it, when he was in the house with Florence, was he looked under her and was like, what the fuck is my Macintosh doing there?
You know what I mean?
So he never once denied anything, ever. And every time he was questioned on the series of events for the murder, it was consistent. He never slipped up once. He never had any inconsistencies in his story. So he should never have been convicted.
No.
And even at her funeral and everything, he was a broken man. So I don't think he did try and get her killed either. I really don't. I think he loved her. She frustrated him, but I think he loved her. And he relied on her awful lot. Like, his doctor, the house cleaner, everyone, they all came forward. They were like, he relied on her so much. Why would he get rid of her? He lost his music partner. He lost his best friend. He lost his primary carer. Like, he lost everything when he lost her.
Yeah.
Why would he put himself into a more vulnerable position?
Exactly. So what I think is more likely that happened is that it seemed that Julia and Parry were having an affair. And I think she might have wanted to end the affair, and he kind of snapped. Killed her, because, again, he had a criminal record. There's nothing to say he didn't kill before if he got away with this one too.
Yeah.
And for him to have promised his father not to talk about the case.
Yeah, that's a bit weird.
Yeah.
And then to make the comment that he'd be hanged, like...
Yeah, exactly. He had a bloody glove, he disposed of a metal pipe, and, like, this is before anyone knew that the metal bar was missing or that a metal bar had been used to kill her.
He fucking did it.
Because the coroners did say it was a blunt object, which a metal bar would be, because, you know, it's round, it's not going to have sharp edges.
Yeah.
So that's what it was that killed her, because the edges of the wounds weren't sharp. So a metal bar ties in perfectly with it. Yeah. But they never searched him. Apparently he was a lead suspect in the case, but he was cleared because of his alibi. His alibi was bogus. His alibi only covers him from 9 p.m. that night. That's after Julia's body got discovered. But they counted that as an alibi.
Like, he didn't kill her after she was dead. Like, no fucking shit.
My best guess is that Parry's father was pretty, like, he had good money and he was good standing in society, and he was been covering for his dumbass son his whole life. I reckon he bought off the police.
Fucking course he did.
Yeah.
Because you can't tell me, like, a coroner is going to say that her time of death was at 6 o'clock when she had, like, was visibly seen by various people until nearly 7 o'clock. And then when someone else rings you, well, like, okay, well, I think this guy did it to... Nah!
Yeah.
Don't think so. And not even look into it at all.
You must have made a mistake. And I mean, like, they could have checked the garage for that blood and seen, like, of course DNA testing wasn't there at the time, but, like, they could have taken the blood and kept it like other cold cases have until DNA testing became a thing.
Yeah.
Then we'd know what actually happened to Julia Wallace. But unfortunately, to this day, Julia Wallace's murder remains a mystery. Nobody knows.
Definitely that lad.
It was him.
Because, like, Liverpool was poor as shit at the time, do you know what I mean? It's a working class place. So if the police are going to get any bit of money that they can, especially for someone that's well off, I'm like, oh, this is my dipshit son.
Yep, exactly. Because it's just after the outbreak of the war and everything. Like, it was a bad time economically. So that's why all the string of burglaries was happening.
Yeah.
And the police aren't going to be making a whole lot of money if there's not a lot of shit like this going on. So it's easy to buy them off. I think, anyway, personally. There is a theory that it was John and Florence.
Ooh, why?
Because they had a key to the house. Because they were saying, during, like, their interviews and stuff like that, they said that they'd seen her leave with William when she was saying goodbye to him, and that she had headed down the alley to look for their cat, but they'd never seen her come back.
Ooh.
So it could be a thing of, like, they saw her leave, they went in to try and get the money, and then, you know, she had a cough and stuff, so she was in the parlour, and they could have heard her in the parlour, and, you know, that's why they only got the £4 and not the rest of it.
Yeah.
And because she caught them in the act of murder when they went in to steal the money from there, they had no choice but to kill her. Or in the act of theft, sorry, not in the act of murder.
Wait, if she was kind of struck from the back, how would she have seen them? She had no defensive wounds, so surely...
Well, she's
not going to turn her back to them, though.
Well, no, but, like, there was two of them, so she could have been, say, talking to Florence or, like, what the fuck are you doing? And then John comes up behind her and just cracks her in the back of the skull, you know?
Yeah.
Something like that. I'm not big on the John and Florence theory myself.
No, I don't think it makes sense, to be honest.
I don't see why they would, but it's just one of the theories of what might have happened to her. But my thing is that it's got to be Parry.
Yeah.
Or there's something with Richard Mather.
Yeah, see, that RM shit was weird.
Something about that. Because that phone call, they tried to say that William Wallace made it himself to give himself an alibi. But I don't believe that either, because he wasn't really in the art of disguising his voice. Whereas Parry was.
He was an actor.
And, like, he was always in the fucking cafe, so they would have recognised his voice if he'd made the call himself.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I don't believe that William Wallace made the call himself either.
No.
That call was made to guarantee that he was out of the house at that time of the evening. So I think it was sometime between 7:30 and 8 p.m. is when she was killed.
She was killed.
So, so that's the Wallace case. And like I said, I left out so much information. There's so many other characters you can get. Like, there's genuinely like 200 other people that I could have mentioned by name. There's every single detail you could possibly want to know about this case. They compressed it all fabulously in an unbiased way on outline.com. They did a great job because I would not have been able to condense the notes at all if it wasn't for that website. And they don't try and lead you which way or, you know, left or right with who kind of killed them. It's just like, here's all
the facts. Make your own conclusion, yeah.
Make your own conclusion. So, and I'm not trying to lead you either with thinking it's parry, but for
fucking parry.
Like I took my information from an unbiased source. I'm trying to be an unbiased source, but like, smells like parry to me.
Yeah.
So
honestly.
Yeah. So that's it. That's,
well done.
That's the Wallace case. I know it's not exactly a case we could take the piss out of like we normally do, but
Fuck it, we do it enough anyway. But like, exactly. That's mental like that. It's such a big case. I've never heard anything
about it. Never heard of it in my life.
No, me neither.
And it's huge. It is huge. So many documentaries, so many books, so many. Like, I think there's even a movie about it, I'm not sure. But, like, it's all there.
Yeah, like, the story isn't familiar to me
exactly,
or anything.
Yeah.
Myself either. I knew not a thing that I heard about it until I actually looked it up. But it was an interesting one to go through, for sure.
Oh, my head would have been wrecked looking at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That now you know why I had such a hard time trying to get my notes together. Never again will I pick a topic that long unless it's a full episode. Never again.
We'll definitely do it again. I don't know why we're lying to ourselves.
Of course we are. We're idiots. We do this to ourselves all the time.
So silly.
And we're about to get Cuiva's rendition of how she just did it to herself now.
Okay, so I decided to do my unsolved case. It's not unsolved, but it is unsolved, but it shouldn't fucking be. On Kendrick Johnson. So Kendrick Johnson was born on the 10th of October in 1995, which I actually didn't realise, but he's only like a month younger
than me. That's really fucking... I feel like it makes it a lot more real
It made it like...
Yeah. It's because you can relate to it because you're so close in age, like it could have been me kind of thing.
Yeah, like when he was in school, like I was in school too.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But anyways, he was an honour roll student and he was a high-profile three-sport athlete within his high school.
Class.
And he had dreams of playing professional football.
Wow.
So he was, like, well-known within his own high school and he played three different sports. So
very fucking motivated, you know, though, to be able to keep that high
that's
the GPA.
A lot to do.
Do three fucking different sports.
Like, and to be an honour roll student, like, he was a smart guy.
Yeah, because, like, usually the sports and academic side of things don't go hand in hand, so...
Like, well, I think they have a rule now that if you play football...
Yeah, you have to have it maintained, like...
A specific, like, not a GPA, but, like, you have to have, like... You have to get all Bs or at least or whatever the fuck. But either way, it's impressive.
Yeah.
So, anyways, on January 11th, 2013, he was just gone 17. He was discovered upside down inside a vertical rolled up wrestling mat in the gym of his high school in Georgia.
Oh my God,
so,
yes, I know this case.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's very interesting.
But yes, I know it.
These mats, they were that, you know, those blue, really thick mats that she used to
pee on,
pee on and stuff. When they were rolled up and stood up, they were 3 foot wide and nearly 6 foot tall. Like that, they were huge. Right, and the students in the school, to avoid playing for lockers, because I'm presuming, you know,
don't
they
make
pay for
your
lockers
students
in the gym.
Pay for lockers.
They,
yeah, honestly, yeah, that's stingy. They don't go there by choice; they're forced to go there, so don't make them pay for shit.
The students used to like store their shoes and, you know, their bags and hoodies and stuff in the rolled up mats when they weren't in use, because, you know, obviously hiding places. Kendrick was discovered by students who were climbing on these mats. That they came across him. And when they found him, that he had actually been already dead for 24 hours.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, maybe not 24 hours, but it was the next day, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but long enough to leave a body there undiscovered.
Yeah, so they found him, basically, they saw his feet because he was upside down, and he had no shoes on when he was found. A student that he went to school with, he must have been Kendrick's friend, they said that they shared a pair of Adidas shoes, and they used to store them in the mats. So that the other student could come in and use them. Because, you know, they'd have their gym clothes, so they used to, instead of buying a pair each, they had the same size shoes, so they just used to
save fucking money, do you know what I mean?
Proper runners are expensive, so it's a smart plan.
Yeah, so, made sense. Anyways, so, yeah, Kendrick was, it was theorised that he was going in to reach the shoes and that he fell in and got stuck upside down.
Right.
I'm going to say right now that it doesn't make sense.
No, I mean,
to
if
me,
this was a thing they did on a regular basis, I don't know how all of a sudden he would have gotten stuck.
That one time.
But not even that, but they were 6 foot tall. He was never going to be able to
You're
reach
not
going to
reach the bottom of that.
Kendrick was only, I think he was 5'10", I think he was.
Right.
I have it written here somewhere. But anyway, so like realistically, no matter how far he got in, he wouldn't have
those
been able
shoes,
to reach
the
shoes
at all. So it just doesn't make sense. But anyways, so yeah. So they said that basically he'd fallen in while he was trying to reach his shoes and gotten trapped and had suffocated, basically. The position he was in was that he had one hand by his side and one hand above his head. So, like, one hand to the ground and his head was, like, that. So that's why they said that he must have been reaching for his shoes, because he had one hand up. The way he, like, died, basically, was that he was upside down. So after he died, like, the blood rushed to his head and he started bleeding.
Oh. Right.
And there was a shoe in the bottom of the mat, but the shoe was sitting on top of the blood.
Oh!
There was no blood on the shoe. No. And there was, yeah, right? Makes no sense.
No.
But there was also a pair of shoes thrown in. So, you know, he's upside down, right? His feet with no shoes on are up in the air. Well, not up in the air, but they're like up. And there was a pair of shoes thrown in at his feet as well.
What now?
Yeah, right? So, unless it was another student's shoes... But I don't think it was. I think they were his shoes that he wasn't wearing, and he was swapping his shoes out, and his shoes were thrown in after him. It makes no sense. None of this makes sense.
None of that is adding up.
So they did a preliminary investigation and autopsy, and that concluded that his death was accidental. When these mats were rolled up, there was a 14-inch hole in the centre that he could fit into, it was like. But his shoulders were 19 inches
across. Sure, he's not getting in there.
He wouldn't have been able to squeeze in at all.
He's 5'10" and 19 inches across, and the hole in the centre of the mat was 14 inches across and 6 foot deep.
He was not getting in it.
He wasn't. That doesn't make sense. It makes no sense.
And again, he was a smart cookie. He would have known
better
than
to. He's not fucking stupid.
It just doesn't make sense, right? And another point that his parents made, because his parents thought it was suspicious from the jump, they said that he was in a school with 3,000 students. How did no one hear him? Because, of course, you'd be calling out for help.
Yeah.
He didn't just get stuck and sit there, like. They said that it would have been possible for him to probably, like, squish in. Mm. But why would
How
you do
are you
that?
Going to contort right. yourself that tight?
And his parents
tight.
Are, like, of the opinion that...
And if it was just to get air yoga runners, he's smart.
Like,
I'm
four
sorry.
Inches is a
he's
lot
a clever
to, like,
kid. Would he not have just rolled it out to get the shoes? Because he's going to look at that and know that he's not able to get in it.
But that's what they used to do. They used to
that's
knock
what I
the
mean.
Mat.
They used, if they used to do this a lot, then he's not going to change his tactic all of a sudden. You
and
know,
make it harder on himself.
But he wouldn't even have been... There was no way in which he would have been able to reach the shoes.
No physical way at all.
In any shape or form. By reaching in from above,
and
unless he literally got in.
He played
in.
Three different sports. He would have been muscular, so he would have known, like, I'm probably too wide for this.
Yeah.
Maybe don't do it that way. Even if he'd never done it before, you know?
To go in, get into a tight space, upside down, into a space.
It's not possible.
It's not realistic.
No.
Right?
And how would they have stayed up as well, can I ask, when he was crawling in on top of it?
He would
down.
Have been struggling for breath and stuff. He would have knocked
he
it
He might
over.
Have been able to, because if that is, like, pretend that is what happened. Like, he would have been so tight, he wouldn't have been able to get enough movement to get enough momentum, we'll say.
Even, like, he could have kicked his legs and stuff, that would have knocked it over.
He was down in the mat, because he was only 5'10".
Okay, I getcha.
He was, like,
I think,
you know,
I'm imagining
a
bit
two
more
or three inches
leg
too short.
Out,
Okay.
No, well, there's pictures there, and, like, maybe it's because he's kind of scrunched up a bit, but, like, his feet, I'd say barely.
Either way,
he
didn't put himself in there. That's all I'm saying.
Either way, it's unrealistic, right? So from the jump, it doesn't make sense. Yeah, they found the shoe underneath him that was lying on top of a pool of blood, but there was no blood on the shoe itself. On the floor of the gym, there was a hoodie and a pair of orange and black gym shoes, and there was also traces of blood on the wall nearby.
How the fuck did that get there?
Yep.
Yeah. So investigators tested the blood that was underneath Kendrick and said that it didn't belong to him.
The fuck did it belong
and
to?
They said that the blood had likely been there for a long time, right? And investigators also said that they didn't take in the hoodie or the orange and black gym shoes into evidence because they didn't think it was important.
Anything around it you're going to take and treat it as it's important.
Like, maybe the blood wasn't his. But what high school leaves, like, maybe this is like, maybe high schools are like that in America, but, like, a pool of blood, like, a significant amount of blood. Like, I saw the pictures, it wasn't drips, like, there was a lot of blood. You don't just leave that
and
there.
And then,
like,
where did
janitors...
that blood come from to begin with? Like, how do you just explain away a pool of blood? Like, I don't remember ever dramatically bleeding in school, or anyone else ever dramatically bleeding in school.
But either way, you clean it up, it's a biohazard.
Exactly.
And for blood to be smeared on the walls nearby, it just doesn't make any sense. Lieutenant Stride Jones, he headed up the investigation for the Lowndes County Sheriff's Office. He said that we never had credible information that indicated this was anything other than an accident.
Are you
evidence.
Yeah,
is
his
enough.
Death was ruled. The case was ruled accidental by the county sheriff's office. Not even 24 hours after he was discovered.
So 24 hours? Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, he hadn't even been dead 2 days, and they decided it was an accident.
No, easier than investigating it, isn't it?
Yeah. So, anyways, the family obviously were like, "This is wrong. Like, this can't be real." So they had a second autopsy performed. Mm-hmm. They had him exhumed and had a second autopsy performed.
For them, like,
So they hired a private pathologist, and he said that the cause of death was blunt force trauma to his neck, basically. Oh. That he had hemorrhage, like bruising on his neck, that he said that was his cause of death. That autopsy was completed on the 15th of June. He said that his findings indicated traces of blunt force trauma to the right side of his thorax, which is like his rib cage, and soft tissues.
Right.
And suggested that the death was not accidental. So soft tissues, I'm presuming, is like muscle area, so like your...
So he'd taken a beating, basically, then?
Yeah. He showed signs of being in a physical, like, fight. Basically, this autopsy also found, when they like exhumed him, that all his organs were gone.
What?
He'd been stuffed with newspapers.
With newspapers?
Yeah. So basically, according to the funeral home had received him back from the first autopsy with his organs gone.
That's so sketch.
So they embalmed him and buried him. They filled him, like, apparently sawdust and newspapers and stuff like that is used when someone is hollow,
but
I suppose.
Who gave them permission to take his organs in the first place to have to do that?
Apparently, when the coroner, I think he's called, the first guy who did the
autopsy,
they said they removed the organs and they were going to send them back with him. I don't know why they I presume they need to do testings on
organs
and stuff,
for
bruising or something.
Yeah, they do normally remove them, like, and stuff like that. Like, normally when you die and you get an autopsy done, like, they'll remove your brain and all of that stuff. They don't put it back where they found it. They just shove it all into your chest and stomach area and sew you back up.
Yeah, but they will...
But, like,
they leave them there
it
so they can be tested
back
in the future.
In, exactly.
They always, but apparently, according to the GBI, is what they call themselves, they had been destroyed through natural process. So basically, they had started rotting, I suppose, and discarded before the body was sent back.
So they pretty much got rid of them straight away.
That's
fucking weird.
Itchy as fuck. Right? So basically, what happened, the first autopsy had been done. They sent back the body empty with no organs. The funeral home had filled him with newspaper and never said nothing, just buried him, because that was just they had to fill the void with something, and newspaper, sawdust was what they used. Obviously, Kendrick's family filed a complaint because they were like, what the fuck, against the funeral home operator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the Georgia Secretary of State's office found that the funeral home didn't follow best practice. Mm-hmm. And that there was other materials that they could have used that were more acceptable than newspaper. But anyways, they ended up clearing the funeral home of any wrongdoing because...
Well, because they weren't the ones that took the fucking organs.
They weren't the ones that took them. It was the original autopsy guy.
No, I know that, like, but why isn't there some sort of... why didn't they have some sort of repercussions? Why did it report it?
They should have reported
it.
It's probably very normal, though. It's only, like, if he had died from natural causes and he just had an autopsy done, it probably happens, and they probably didn't even think of it.
Yeah.
You know, they might not have known that it was a murder.
Done,
like, it's something, I'm presuming it's something that they do maybe kind of regularly. Like, if there's an empty space, that they just fill it and they don't ask questions.
Yeah, if you're like an organ donor and stuff and all your organs have been taken after death,
true as well,
that's
actually
what they do. They'd fill you out with something. They have to fill you out with something, otherwise you're going to...
Yeah, I know, but I feel like if you are an organ donor, the funeral parlor, gets told that. I don't feel like there's, like, obviously a gap in this fucking communication there. That's what I'm saying.
It should have been documented.
Their main fault is that they didn't report it. They should have reported it.
Yeah.
So after the opinion of the private pathologist, like, after his opinion was released, they filed a civil suit against the funeral home and started seeking money damages, of course.
Mm-hmm. That shit's traumatic. Like.
Yeah, of course. Like, you know, to find out your son had been filled with newspapers and you didn't even, like,
you
it's
weren't
just
told,
so disrespectful.
Like,
His family said that they believed that he had been murdered and hired an attorney named Benjamin Crump, kind of bad name, but anyways. On October 31st, 2013, the U.S. attorney for the Middle District of Georgia announced that the office would open a formal review into Kendrick's death. He made an application to the Georgia Church to practice in Georgia, representing his family, because I presume he probably had the right to practice elsewhere, but he needed to apply to practice in Georgia because obviously different states have different rules or whatever. His application was never ruled on, so he had to withdraw from representing the family.
Fucking hell.
No, see, there's too much now.
Yep.
Yeah. There's too much falling through the cracks, being ignored, mm-hmm. being let go until it's too late to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, Kendrick's family then filed a legal action to open a coroner's inquiry into his death, which would basically figure out the who, what, where, when yeah. of his death. Like, what happened, where,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
The judge in that case delayed a decision. He was waiting for the outcome of the US District Attorney review.
Okay.
So the family demanded that the governor of Georgia immediately authorize inquiry instead so he could kind of override the whole mm-hmm. thing. The Johnson family, together with the NAACP, so the National Association of the Advancement of Colored People, and other civil rights activists, then had a rally in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. The governor's office then released a statement saying that they were still going to wait for the US attorney's report. So there's just so much waiting around yeah. for someone else to say something. So then in November 2013, there was 290 hours of surveillance tape from the 35 cameras around the gym area. That was all released to CNN following a court request. CNN enlisted the help of a forensic analyst, found that tapes from two cameras were missing an hour and 5 minutes of
footage. That's a lot of time.
While another set was missing 2 hours and 10 minutes of footage.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So they tried to kind of smooth things over and kind of make excuses, basically, that there was apparently lapses in coverage, that they were apparently from the fact that the camera systems weren't properly synchronized.
No, it doesn't.
It makes no sense, right? That they were basically giving the impression of a gap where no gap existed. But this is mm-hmm. untrue, because in the tapes, you literally see Kendrick vanish into fucking thin air. It was doctored.
100%.
You know? A lot of the camera systems were motion activated, which is fair enough, that some of them, you know, weren't activated
yeah. because yeah.
there's no one moving. And also, apparently, the area where Kendrick's body was discovered, you know, where the gym mats were stored,
yeah.
was outside the range of all of the surveillance cameras.
Oh, how fortunate.
It's so
you've that many cameras. Like, what did you say? 30-odd cameras?
35 in the gym area. And none of them
yeah,
are pointing
see,
at the mats.
To me, that sounds like bollocks.
Yep.
To me, it sounds like a lot of bollocks, because especially in America, where there's like, you know, if something happens to a kid, aka literally,
yeah,
they have cameras on every single inch. Yep. You know, in my secondary school, there was no cameras really at all.
No.
But in America, like, they're very big on CCTV and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way that such a big area of the gym, like the whole corner of the gym,
if everything
was just
else
not
is recorded,
filmed.
And then all of a sudden, where he was murdered, I'm saying murdered, isn't recorded.
Yeah. Like, I'm sorry.
That's
if our shitey school Savannah could have fucking CCTV and they kept that
yeah.
it was, a big fucking high school in Atlanta has plenty of CCTV that's able to, like, scan every
genuinely.
Inch of
yeah.
that place.
And our school was a glorified fucking caravan. Like, we had to put buckets out in winter because the ceiling would leak water
yeah.
and, like,
and would break.
It was bad.
Jesus.
It was bad.
There's no excuse for it. It doesn't make any sense to me. None of this makes sense to me aside from what his parents are saying, which is that it's all a setup.
100% was.
That's what I believe.
Yeah.
So
couldn't agree more.
I'm going to say the Johnson family had attorneys, and these attorneys expressed fears that the camera footage was edited as part of a cover-up.
Yep.
However, yep. analysis of the camera systems by the Valdosta Daily Times tried to explain anomalies. They kind of tried to say that there was reasons for these kind of discrepancies, and this kind of cast doubt on the idea, the theory of a cover-up. They said that basically that the attorneys for the Johnsons, they were not entirely truthful in their statements, and that there was no cover-up in this case.
Oh, I'm sorry, so, they're entitled to
yeah.
think there's a cover-up when their fucking teenage son
their
has very
is.
Clearly been murdered.
Exactly.
And there is a string of evidence already, and we're like, what, halfway into the story? And there's a string of evidence already that
yeah.
it was definitely
well, we're not
a cover-up.
Even to the part. Like, just wait, like, I swear to God. So the family of Kendrick, they filed a wrongful death lawsuit against Lowndes County Board of Education, its superintendent, and the high school
mm-hmm.
principal.
Good.
Rightfully so.
And
mm-hmm.
this suit said that Johnson had been violently assaulted, severely injured, suffered great physical pain and mental anguish, and subjected to insult and loss of life on January 10th. They weren't
yeah.
wrong.
Yeah.
Basically. The lawsuit didn't, like, name anyone who was in, like, that they alleged was involved, and didn't, like, mention the race of anyone, but it did imply a race-based, like, side
right.
to
yeah.
the
yeah.
assault, if you know what I mean. That basically Kendrick was black guy, and that it was race-based, which implies that persons who did it was white.
Okay.
Right.
The lawsuit alleged that defendants were negligent and violated Johnson's constitutional right to equal protection based on race.
Yeah.
so that they had basically killed him for racial reasons on top of whatever other reasons.
And now they're failing to protect his fucking legacy. That, like, I know he's only a kid, but you leave something behind. Like, they're totally mistreating, like, this case.
If it was a white boy, they'd be investigating.
Absolutely. 100%.
It wouldn't have been closed within 24 hours.
It's racial.
Everything about this, from the murder to the cover up, is racially motivated, from my opinion.
It's alleged in the lawsuit, they alleged that the defendants, Lowndes County Board of Education, the superintendent and the high school principal, that they had ignored reports that previously that Kendrick had been repeatedly attacked and harassed by a white student. I'll mention which white student in a while. That he had been attacked on a bus trip 14 months prior to his death, and the lawsuit further alleged that another student had a history of provoking and attacking Kendrick at school, stating that the provocations took place in the presence of the coaching staff and employees of the school after his mother complained about the previous attack. So basically his mom had complained to the school that he was being attacked and beaten.
They did nothing about it, and then let him get further attacked
because the student was
led away with it. Yeah.
Getting his own back, basically, getting revenge on the fact that he had been reported in the first place. The suit also alleged that, I have to say alleged a lot, but alleged that school officials failed to properly monitor the activities of students throughout all areas, of the campus, and to maintain a properly functioning video surveillance system. That they had basically, their security was shite, basically. Yeah. There's these two boys, Brian and Brandon Bell. Brian is the younger brother. Brian is the white student.
That was bullying him. Yeah. Or not bullying him.
So,
he wasn't bullying him. He was fucking attacking
bullying
him.
Bullying that escalated into a whole lot more than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so obviously it was known within the school that they had had a history and that this was the student that was being talked about. Yeah. So in August 2014, the parents of Brian and Brandon Bell filed a $5 million lawsuit against Ebony Magazine after the magazine published a series of articles naming two students as possible suspects in the death. And the magazine used pseudonyms, but their description of the boys was very accurate.
Everybody knew,
including the fact that their father was a retired FBI agent.
Oh, fuck off!
There we go. There was an email to the sheriff's office alleging that the younger of the two brothers, Brian, was the one who killed Kendrick after he found out that Kendrick had slept with his girlfriend. So Rick and Karen Bell, Brian and Brandon's parents, still say that they weren't involved in his death, are not considered suspects, and have been harassed as a result of the publication. So I'll explain more about that in a bit. In January 2015, Kendrick's family filed a $100 million civil lawsuit in the Superior Court of DeKalb County against 38 individuals. 38 of these people, they included three of Johnson's classmates, local, state and federal officials, the school superintendent, the Valdosta Lowndes Crime Lab, the police chief of Valdosta, which is obviously the town they live in, many sheriff's deputies, the city of Valdosta, the state medical examiner, the GBI, so Georgia Bureau of Investigation, and its five agents, and an FBI agent.
So pretty much everyone that fucked everything up on this case. Yeah,
every single person.
I'm so far inclined and nothing I can argue with.
Yeah, see no issue with it.
Yeah.
No.
So his family were saying that his death was a murder and accused these people of being involved in a conspiracy to cover up the homicide.
Yeah.
Because obviously, I don't know how small this town is, but in a small town, an ex-FBI agent is going to have a lot of weight to throw around with.
Yep.
And a lot of fucking money, man.
That's true, actually. Is that
white middle America strikes again.
So Jim Elliott, the Lowndes County attorney, said that these allegations were unfounded and baseless and that any response would be made in court. All the local superior court judges recused themselves, said they weren't going to preside over the case, preventing the lawsuit from being filed and heard in Lowndes County. Yeah. The judges' reasons were because of the close proximity to the accused. And for that reason, Chief Judge Harry J. Altman said that it was inappropriate for these judges to preside over the case.
Inappropriate. Yeah.
So, shortly before the lawsuit was filed, the U.S. Attorney for the Middle District of Georgia, Michael J. Moore, said in a statement that a federal investigation was still open and that the investigation was proven more complicated and was taking longer than they'd originally anticipated.
So they were sitting on their arses doing nothing, basically.
Michael J. Moore, this guy, Michael J. Moore, has since resigned.
Good.
So after he resigned, the case was transferred to the Northern District of Ohio under Stephen Dettelbach, and shortly after receiving his Kendrick Johnson case, he resigned as well.
So basically, they all knew that there was a cover-up. They all knew that it had been a murder, and they didn't want to.
They didn't want to be involved with it. So obviously, this whatever the fuck was Rick Bell has a lot of weight to throw around. Yeah. That people are either scared of him and afraid to go up against him. Because an FBI agent, how many people does he know? Like,
oh, he'd be in with everyone, for sure.
Like, your life would be fucking ruined.
Yeah.
And that's why people don't want to fucking touch it.
Yeah, well, like, you don't know. Like, he could have a... He could, you know, you could end up dead. Like,
it wouldn't be the first time.
So anyways, despite these... Genuinely. Despite these resignations, the Department of Justice investigation continued, according to the spokesman, Michael Tobin. So, in November 2015, the Department of Justice filed a motion in the civil case to intervene and stay the case, which basically just stops it in its place.
Yeah.
The US attorney said that allowing evidence discovery in the civil suit to continue would have a chilling effect on the federal investigation, which had expanded into investigating possible obstruction and grand jury witness tampering.
What a joke.
Yeah. So after this motion was denied, Kendrick's parents dismissed their own wrongful death lawsuit, saying that they hoped to refile it after the conclusion of the Department of Justice's investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So they were actually sued pretty much straight away for more than $850,000 in attorney fees and $1 million almost in defamation damages.
Are you fucking... Their son has just quite clearly been murdered.
It's not defamation. It's the truth.
That needs to be our new logo.
Yep.
To be honest.
Yep.
To be honest, yeah.
So then, on June 20th in 2016, the DOJ, so the Department of Justice, said that they wouldn't be filing any criminal charges related to Kendrick's death, saying that after extensive investigation into this tragic event, federal investigators said that there was insufficient evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that someone or some group of people willfully violated Kendrick Johnson's civil rights or committed any other prosecutable federal crime.
So did he just beat the shit out of himself? Yeah. So
just like,
that's it, basically.
Like, I know you two haven't seen Mr. Robot, but like, is this what it's supposed to be? That it's just Elliot beating the shit out of himself instead of like, oh no, I'm sorry, Kendrick did not have a dissociative personality disorder. He wasn't beating himself up. He got murdered.
So no. A year later, so in August 10th, 2017, the Georgia judge Richard Porter ruled that Kendrick's family and their attorney must pay more than $292,000 in legal fees to the dozens of people they accused of foul play in a lawsuit that they had previously dropped.
They only dropped the lawsuit because they were forced to. Like,
what money did they have?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. They probably did not have a lot of money to be paying this shit. Like, they are not...
Why are you suing? Like, $292,000.
It's to scare them away. It's to scare them off. Yeah.
It's to cripple them.
If they're sued for that amount of money, they can't afford to reopen that case again.
During this whole investigation, there was two statements floating around, right? The second one, the first one I'll tell you now is hearsay, but the second one is a court document. The first statement mentioned that Taylor Eakin, who was Brian Bell's girlfriend, Taylor Eakin had told someone's best friend that it was true that she had slept with Kendrick Johnson, and that once Brian Bell, her boyfriend, found out, she said that he threatened Kendrick but wasn't mad at her at all for cheating on him.
Because, you know, there's only ever one party involved when you're cheating.
That makes sense.
Kendrick had told Brian to meet him in the gym after the third block, so after the third block of classes. Both Brian and Ryan Hall, who was Brian's friend, had met Kendrick in the gym and that Brian had killed Kendrick. Brian has also said that he had killed Kendrick multiple times over the phone. Brandon Bell, who's Brian's older brother, who was a student in the same high school, got drunk at a party on the 4th of July in 2013 and told people that Brian had killed Kendrick. The second statement that was floating was made by an acquaintance of Brian's older brother, Brandon. On the 6th of August 2017, a man named Ryan Anthony Dummick Hernandez came forward and said that he'd met Brandon in April 2016. They'd hung out at his apartment and Brandon had told Ryan that his brother Brian had killed Kendrick. He said that Brian, Ryan and Kendrick were in the gym when Brian and Kendrick had gotten into an argument over Brian's girlfriend, and Brian had hit Kendrick in the neck with a 45-pound dumbbell, and Brian had said afterwards that he had thought that this had broken Kendrick's neck. So
I was just about to say, this is basically like solid proof. Oh my God.
Yeah, because how else would he have known that?
Mm-hmm.
When this is a main thing that the coroner said, no, this is what killed him.
Brian had then threatened Ryan, saying his father, Rick Bell, was a retired FBI agent who could make Ryan pay for it if he didn't help move Kendrick's body and, you know, set up the crime scene. Brandon said that Rick Bell, so the FBI agent, had also called Sheriff Chris Prine after learning of the fight and Kendrick's death. He said that Rick had also contacted another FBI agent, probably an ex-co-worker, who had helped facilitate the deletion or corruption of 1 hour and 25 minutes of original footage on the CCTV. Brandon said that Kendrick's organs were removed and replaced with newspapers to interfere with determining the time of death and any other unknown injuries. He also said that the autopsy was falsely documented. Kendrick's family requested that his body be exhumed for a second time and was granted permission by Valdosta City officials. On June 22nd, 2018, his body was exhumed again, and the findings of the second autopsy, death was not accidental, caused by blunt force trauma, likely due to be struck in the neck with a 45-pound dumbbell, like Brandon had said, were confirmed. They hope that with the results of this third autopsy, the surveillance footage, which they were convinced had been tampered with, and the mishandling of evidence at the scene, would be enough to reopen their son's case. But at the minute, it hasn't been. And as of May 2019, his family has filed another suit against the funeral home. Yeah. And that's it.
They're not getting any fucking peace at all.
I have, there's a change.org petition.
Sign the petition. Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
To reopen Kendrick's case. So change.org, reopen Kendrick Johnson's case, #J for Kendrick. Sign that. I've already signed it just to show your support to open the case. I found all my information on, there was multiple articles I read, Wikipedia and allthat'sinteresting.com under Kendrick Johnson.
Do we know if the family have a GoFundMe to, like, you know, pay for their battle? Because that, you know, the petition to open it is very important, but we need to support this fucking family to be able to pay for it, because there's are going to be
The GoFundMe, the Kendrick Johnson Foundation Fund. Yeah.
Okay, we'll get on it.
We'll, as usual, we got all the links, you know, on our Instagram. The links don't work, but you can just copy paste them from the posts that we make. We'll have the links in the end of the episode description. They'll be up on our Twitter. We don't have a Facebook currently, but I think it's getting to the point where we got to make one.
Yeah.
So we're going to do that. Anything that we don't have, you know, it's the same as usual. If you find anything else, if you know of any other ways that we can help this, because honestly, this is disgusting. And given what's going on in the world at the moment, like, at the moment, I gotta say it, as a white person, I'm ashamed of my race. So we have to do everything we can to support the people who are still struggling, just to prove what is so obviously murder and was so obviously racially motivated. Yeah. Maybe it's just me, and I'm sure you guys feel the same because we're like the same person, but I feel like we have an obligation to do what we can to help these people get fucking justice.
Exactly, yeah.
So, like I said, as usual, all of the links will be anywhere that we post, and you can find it there. Copy and paste it, or click it directly, depending on where it's posted. We'll put all that up. For once, I think this time I'm going to change my little tagline to, this time, for once, let's not be a hypocrite and let's do something good for a change.
Don't forget to tense your ankles.
And join the fucking movement, never mind the cult. Get out there and stand up for your fellow person. Enough of this bullshit.
We'll see you guys next week. Thank you for listening.